Round two. I had forgotten about the first thing that I was going to talk about. And so I had to go look for it. And so I killed the audio for the first one. I was only a minute in. Today is July 1st, 2022. It's a Friday. I know I said I was going to post on a Saturday, so maybe this opens up opportunity for me to put something else out during this long weekend where we're celebrating a holiday that is quickly losing its meaning. I have three things mainly that I was going to talk about. The first of which is the decision that the Supreme Court made on religious expression in schools. And this was a the story here is, looks like in 2015 there was a part-time assistant football coach who went out to the 50-yard line after a football game to pray, and people basically said that they were in a way that was coercive to the students, making them feel that when an authority figure, someone they might look up to, goes out to do any sort of religious expression or worship, that they might feel compelled to join. So they said that that's okay. And my thing here is I kind of find myself in the middle with this, because it depends on, which way you go with this situation. So basically, I don't want to say that it's like fair game in schools, but religion is, I guess, something that can now be mentioned or discussed, which is okay, but it's got to be done in such a way where, you don't have all the time in the world, so you can't discuss every religion. So that whole question of, making it equitable, to make a discussion out of all of it is obviously not going to happen. But if a school decided to incorporate, we're going to have a religion class, and we're going to talk about, Islam and Christianity and Buddhism and whatever else, that would be okay. When I was in college, I had to take a class like that. It was a prerequisite for some reason. And then they gave us like an option as to where we wanted to go, to observe, like sit in on like a, the class was, we talked about religious systems and belief systems. And I went with a friend to sit in on like a, I don't know what you would call it. I think it was just like a Buddhist gathering. And we just kind of hung out and participated in the stuff that they did, a lot of meditating and stuff. So in a way, like I'm not saying I'm okay with it, because I really don't feel like there's any reason that religion needs to be discussed in schools. That's kind of the reason that we have religious schools in the first place, is because if they want to incorporate that stuff either into their teaching, or, they want to have specific time for specific types of worship and learning, then that's what a religious school is for. And if you really, really care that your child is getting a religious education, then send them to a religious school. And, if you can't afford to, then, they can get a decent education elsewhere. And then you can do all the religious stuff that is aside from a religious school. But my thing is here that this ruling seems to just, kind of like with all the other shit that's been happening over the past, week and a half, is just another ruling that makes Christian people happy who are not really Christian people. And that bothers me because I know the people who really want to talk about religion in a classroom don't have care for the religions that aren't theirs. In this case, it would be that new evangelical Christianity that we've been seeing so much, you know, at the podiums and the street corners. You know, just kind of that whole hiding your behavior behind your book of choice. I don't agree with that. I feel like it's something that could be abused really easily. And I, you know, just if it's a conversation about grooming, you know, I know that's been mentioned a bunch. I think nothing screams grooming more than, you know, a teacher saying to a group of children of any age, really, because, you know, pretty much every child in school, regardless of what grade they're in, is pretty impressionable. I think it's inappropriate. I had a friend that messaged me that said that they have brothers who are not... Let me pull up the message if I can find it. Because it was a great point, and I'm glad that it was mentioned. And if you're listening, I hope that you're not mad that I'm saying this, but I'm not going to give anyone any details as to who you are. They have brothers that are both Muslim and are raised as they are, under that culture and that belief system. But they're both blonde and don't fit into what someone would typically stereotype someone of that religion to look like. And they're younger, and so this person's concern was that they would feel coerced into or compelled to participate in religious observation that is not part of their life, which I would definitely say is incredibly unfair if it were to happen. And I'm sure that in certain parts of the country where religion is, you know, the first thing that is thought about when you wake up and the last thing that you think about before you go to bed, I do feel bad for kids that are going to be in those environments that don't want to be. And especially in those situations where you'll feel kind of compelled or, you know, uncomfortable and feel that you need to participate in something that you don't want to. And again, I've said this before, I'm an atheist, and my opinion on this, I had posted a thing on it. Let me just find it really quick. I just don't want to paraphrase something that I can easily pull up. where the fuck is it? Yeah. So this was on June 27th. The ruling came out. I said, if any mention of religion happens in schools now, at the very least, it has to be equally distributed amongst multiple religions. The Supreme Court ruling is very exciting for Christians that want to brainwash kids into their religion. As an atheist, it bothers me that I know this ruling will be taken advantage of by some educators to push Christianity. Even as an atheist, I believe that all religions, including atheism, even though it's not a religion, should be discussed if an educator feels that it needs to occur. To discuss the one that's personal to you is inappropriate and grooming. And the other question is here, if this were, because this whole thing started because a coach went out and prayed in the middle of a field. But the question that a lot of people were raising, which has been going unanswered for the past few days now, is if it was some other form of worship that wasn't just a simple Christian praying on the knee. if it would have been tolerated at all in the first place, which I would say the answer is no. And I would still say that the answer would be no, and that people would be dishonest if they said anything else, because let's face it, like I said, the people that are excited about this ruling didn't mention religion in general. They mentioned God and Jesus is Lord and Christianity. So again, it's right in front of you. Something very exciting for them. Another thing moving on. I'm going to get to that one in a second. Well, that one's the last one. The Supreme Court restricted the EPA's authority to mandate carbon emissions reductions. This article is from NPR. I think this was yesterday they did this. Yeah, June 30th. This article is by Nina Totenberg. I can listen to it, but why would I do that? Might as well work on my shoddy reading skills. The U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday dealt a major blow to the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate carbon emissions that cause climate change. The decision by the conservative court majority sets the stage for further limitations on the regulatory power of other agencies as well. By a vote of 6-3, the court said that at any time an agency does something big and new, in this case addressing climate change, the regulation is presumptively invalid unless Congress has specifically authorized regulating in this sphere. That's a very big deal because they're not going to get it from Congress, because Congress is essentially dysfunctional, said Harvard Law professor Richard Lazarus, an expert on environmental law. This could not have come at a worse time, because the consequences of climate change are increasingly dire and we're running out of time to address it. As Case Western Reserve professor Jonathan Adler put it, the court is definitely sending a signal to regulatory agencies more broadly that they only have the power that Congress delegated to them, and that agencies need to think twice before they try to pour new wine out of old bottles. In other words, an agency can't simply retrofit an old statute or create new tools or new mechanisms to address a problem that is generally within the agency's jurisdiction. In terms of climate change, Lazarus believes it will have an immediate effect. Quote, remember when Joe Biden was elected, he said we're going to use whole big government approach to climate change, not just EPA regulation. Well, that whole government approach may now find itself under a cloud of this court's opinion. The issue before the court was how the EPA can regulate coal-fired power plants, which in this country are the single largest source of carbon emissions that cause climate change. The Obama administration set state-by-state carbon limits and encouraged states to rely less on coal and more on alternative energy sources. Even though the program was blocked by the courts, it met its target 11 years ahead of schedule for the simple reason that it turned out coal was too expensive compared to other power-generating sources. But on Thursday, the Supreme Court turned thumbs down on any such systemic approach, bringing to life what the court has called the major questions doctrine. The court said that neither the EPA nor any other agency may adopt rules that are transformational to the economy unless Congress has specifically authorized such a rule to address a specific problem like climate change. Writing for the court majority, Chief Justice John Roberts said that under what the court has recently called the major questions doctrine, neither the EPA nor any other agency may adopt rules that are transformational to the economy unless Congress has specifically authorized such a transformative rule to address a specific problem like climate change. In certain extraordinary cases, both separation of power principles and a practical understanding of legislative intent make us reluctant to read into ambiguous statutory text the delegation claimed to be lurking there, Roberts writes. To convince us otherwise, something more than a merely plausible textual basis for the agency action is necessary. The agency instead must point to clear congressional authorization for the power it claims. Justice Alina Kagan, in a furious dissent, said essentially that the court is making up new rules that contradict nearly a century of regulatory law. The text of the Clean Air Act, she said, clearly anticipates that the EPA will have to deal with new problems and use broad language to allow that. The court majority, she says, does not have a clue about how to address climate change, yet it appoints itself, instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening. She was joined by the court's other two liberals. The decision appeared to enact major new limits on agency regulations across the economy, limits of a kind not imposed by the court for 75 years or more. The decision, for instance, casts a cloud of doubt over a proposed Securities and Exchange Commission rule that would require companies offering securities to the public to disclose climate-related risks, like severe weather events that have or likely will affect their business models. Also in jeopardy is a new interim rule adopted by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission aimed at treating greenhouse gas emissions and their contribution to climate change, the same as all other environmental impacts considers. The decision was a particularly bad omen for environmentalists. In a very real sense, it seemed to reject any holistic regulatory attempt to deal with climate change. I agree with what Kagan said. Court majority does not have a clue about how to address climate change, yet it appoints itself instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening. I do agree with that. I was kind of confused because I had heard this thing. My wife had said a few times that the court was going to be making a ruling on the environment. And I was like, well, what the hell does that mean? So I was kind of curious when this finally came out as to, you know, what the details were. And when I read it for the first time, it just didn't make sense. And I think that this is, you know, another argument for term limits across the board for everybody, because it gets to a certain point where, you know, these effects that are potentially going to happen as a result of climate change on the environment is going to happen. I think they projected in the next 10 years. There's like some clock somewhere in New York City that has a countdown. And so we have 10 years, right? And will a lot of the Supreme Court justices still be alive in 10 years? Will they still be on the court in 10 years? Unfortunately, probably yes to both of those things. Now, the thing is, you know, once the effects really start to take place, you look maybe 20, 25, 30 years ahead. It's safe to say that a handful of them will be gone. And, you know, the decisions that they made, they won't see the impact of. I think if there's anything that should be a qualifier of what allows someone to run for any sort of power in the government, it should be that they will exist to implement changes that they're going to be able to see in the course of their lifetime and their voters' lifetime. And I know that in saying that, you disregard a lot of the opinions of the 60, 70, 80, 90-year-old people that are still voting. But I think while, you know, systematically that could be controversial, I think that ethically you can't really question that. Because again, you know, if I'm going to be making decisions about something that I'm not going to be here to see through, it's kind of pointless. It's kind of, you know, similar to waiting until you're dead to write your will, because you were waiting to see how your family responded to the news that you'd passed away. It just doesn't make sense and it wouldn't work. So I, you know, as that was just like a tangent of an argument, I just don't understand. And, you know, while it's not the worst thing that they've done, it's definitely just a telling thing. You know, and somehow this whole discussion of, you know, climate and, you know, it's just, everything is on the same level, because I think that the purpose is to find a reason to disagree with people. And I mean, I think with the decisions that the courts have been making, it's obviously a conservative majority. You have one that's trying to argue, well, you know, this is what the Constitution says, and, you know, we need to follow the parameters of this. I think that if you dug up the founding fathers and, you know, threw some pixie dust in their face and brought them back to life for a few minutes and asked them the question of, you know, you've been gone a while. Here's what the deal is. Something's going on where like the earth is getting hotter and we're trying to do this thing where we can kind of like keep it where it's at just so, you know, the water levels don't start rising and cities get flooded and stuff. You know, where a lot of these judges and politicians have their vacation homes when they're away from pretending to care about us. And, oh yeah, by the way, they don't care about us. And we were just wondering if you would say, you know, despite what the Constitution may allow one to interpret as a reasonable ruling for this, based off that, wouldn't you say that it would be more sensible to allow the government to, you know, enforce these regulations on companies and corporations so we don't have these issues that will affect, you know, younger people in the next 2 decades or so, you know, where you got to put on a life vest before you leave your house just because you live too close to a shoreline. And they would probably say, oh, you know what, that's a pretty good argument you got there. And then they would tell the conservative majority to go screw themselves. And I think that's how a lot of these rulings recently have been. So while those are all controversial and concerning, I now want to move to the final piece here, which is the, I think like the worst thing that could possibly happen, hasn't been talked about yet, but I guess for the court's next term, they're going to be discussing this stuff. So let me, just zoom ahead really quick. Cause I want to see, all right, I can't find it. So, July 6th, 2020, the Supreme Court unanimously held that states may punish or replace presidential electors who refuse to cast their ballots for the candidate chosen by the voters of their state. So, if any of us have forgotten how this whole democracy experiment is supposed to work, the people that live in the states, the citizens, the taxpayers, cast a vote. Each state has its electors who cast their ballots for the candidate who is chosen by the citizens of said states. So that was agreed on in 2022. What has changed between, 2020. What has changed between 2020 and 2022? Not much, except for people are generally and broadly, widely getting way worse. So yesterday, June 30th, the Supreme Court said that they were going to be looking at a ruling that would then allow states to choose a different candidate if the electors didn't agree with the decision that the people of the state made. So let me get into this article and then I'll talk a little bit about it. How the Supreme Court could radically reshape elections for president and Congress. The U.S. Supreme Court announced Thursday that it has agreed to hear a case next term that could upend election laws across the country, with the potential endorsement of a fringe legal theory about how much power state legislators have over the running of congressional and presidential elections. The case called Moore v. Harper, is centered on newly drawn maps of voting districts for North Carolina's 14 seats in the next U.S. House of Representatives. Republican state lawmakers want to resurrect a map that North Carolina state courts struck down, finding that the map approved by the GOP-controlled legislature violated multiple provisions in the state's constitution by giving Republican candidates an unfair advantage through partisan gerrymandering. The court-drawn map has been put in place instead for this year's midterm elections. A court-drawn map, sorry. In their appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, however, the Republican lawmakers argued that the U.S. Constitution's Elections Clause gives state legislators the power to determine how congressional elections are conducted without any checks and balances from state constitutions or state courts. Based on this independent state legislator theory, they contend that the North Carolina State Court's decision to throw out and replace the legislature-drawn map violates the federal constitution, an argument that radically departs from the U.S. Supreme Court's historical record of deferring to state courts on how state constitutions and laws should be interpreted. A Supreme Court endorsement of the theory could upend election laws across the U.S. The High Court declined in March to weigh in on an emergency request for this case, but in a dissenting opinion, three of the court's conservatives, Justice Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas, signaled that they would likely side with the Republican lawmakers' embrace of this theory. That's promising. Oh, fucking hell. Many legal scholars, however, have been waving warning signs that the High Court's endorsement of the theory could have severe consequences across the country for congressional and presidential elections. Quote, it would be extremely disruptive, says Carolyn Shapiro, a law professor and founder and co-director of Chicago Kent College of Law's Institute on the Supreme Court of the United States. It would allow the possibility that people who don't like state Supreme Court rulings that have been on the books potentially for years could step back in and say, well, actually that ruling only applies to state elections. Under this theory, Shapiro adds, holding elections for different levels of government at the same time could become practically difficult, given that officials would potentially have to prepare for different sets of ballots, voter registration systems, and in some states, voter ID laws. The court's support for the theory could also affect the 2024 presidential election, where I think that on the Republican side, there's going to be a lot of people that you don't want to be president that are going to be running. Vikram Amar, dean of the University of Illinois College of Law, notes that a hypercharged version of the theory pointing to the Elector's Clause of the U.S. Constitution served as the backdrop for the faked elector scheme that is a focus of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Depending on how broadly the Supreme Court rules in the North Carolina redistricting case, Marr says support for the theory by the court could affect the 2024 presidential election. States with Republican-controlled legislators could see it as an invitation to set new election rules that take power away from the voters when picking electors for the Electoral College, or to make state lawmakers, not courts, the judges in disputes after the election. Quote, it is a really grave danger to American democracy to say that state legislators are free from the state constitutions to do whatever they want, says Amar, who co-wrote an article for the Supreme Court Review at the University of Chicago about how the theory goes against an originalist understanding of the U.S. Constitution. State constitutions are an important source of American democracy, limits, and rights, and I think it would be terrible if the U.S. Supreme Court distorted federalism to reject that very important premise. To Shapiro, the Chicago Kent Law College of Law professor, the theory doesn't make any sense at all. The legislators are created by constitutions. Their powers are defined by constitutions. The way those powers interact with other branches of state government is defined by state constitutions. Limitations on those powers are defined by state constitutions, says Shapiro, who wrote an upcoming article on the theory's origins and implications for the University of Chicago Law Review. The idea that there's some kind of legislative power that is separate and apart from the ordinary constitutional limitations is really quite remarkable and lawless. So imagine that, I don't know, you live in a state and they vote for whoever the blue candidate is. And the state's like, I don't know about that. We don't really want that person. So then, you know, the legislator there picks someone else, is how I understand this. So when you have all these states where you have all these governors that, you know, they're not sure who won the presidential election in 2020, they're saying, they don't know that. They don't know what day of the week it is. The list goes on as to what they don't know. It's definitely a dangerous thing. I would definitely say that this ruling, you know, prior to 2024, you know, since it will have an impact on that election potentially if they do overturn it. And if they do overturn it, it would be a phenomenal opportunity to start looking at airfare and possibly getting a passport, learning a different language, you know, whatever. I think that if it were to get overturned, that not only would there be, how do I say this? Not only would there be, do I want to say an uptick? Let's say an uptick in violence, not only on like a local level, but on like a national level. I think around election time, where it's already impossible to try to have a healthy existence as an individual, regardless of whether it's state or national, local, state, or national, really, where that's already impossible, this would add many, many, many more layers to that by basically making the voter know that their vote doesn't necessarily matter. The thing is like, if your state votes for the person that you weren't anticipated to vote for, like if they were projecting you to go red, but you go blue or vice versa, the state's going to go along with that because they're like, well, that's what the people want. So they go along with it. But I guess what they're saying is it doesn't need to go that way. And being how the Supreme Court is doing this whole bullshit with, well, technically, if you really think about it, and then they find some weird argument based on some 200-year-old document as to what this decision should be, I do think that it's a really, really bad thing. And I don't know how else to say it. But yeah, it would be really bad. I mean, look, the only two Republican people that we've heard of so far that are potentially running for president are Trump and Ron DeSantis from Florida. Regardless of what party you affiliate with, if you even affiliate with one, I will confidently say that neither of those people should be allowed to be president. Ron is probably barely aware of the fact that he's governor of Florida. And with obviously the obvious things that Trump has done, the long-lasting impacts that his 4 years have had, even 2 years after he's been out of the office, you know, a lot of the decisions that this court is making right now, they're able to make these decisions because he empowered the court by appointing so many people that would do his dealing for him. And that alone, that's one argument. On a moral level and a rational level, the stuff that Ron DeSantis does in Florida is, I don't even know if they make a phrase for this. I'm trying to think of one. It's just bad. He's big on using the freedom idea. Of he's not really as much of a Jesus guy as he is a freedom guy. And I think that, you know, those two things have the same effect where you're just trying to, you know, you know, if you say cookie near your dog, his ears are going to go up, right? And I have the same, you know, perspective as, you know, if you say, you know, Jesus around some people, or you say freedom around some people, it has the same effect where their ears shoot up. And he just uses that to make a lot of, you know, changes that, you know, to the majority of Americans aren't favorable. This whole, let me just run over to my Instagram really quick because I threw it up on my story yesterday. There was this thing where, hold on a second. Nope, never mind. Didn't realize that. Okay, one moment. Let me find it. Brian. Cohen, there we go. Wait, this isn't him. Oh, there we go. Okay, so this whole, and I don't know if I talked about it or if I had taken a break from doing this when it initially came out, but there was this bill in Florida that DeSantis was trying to push through. It was being referred to as the Don't Say Gay bill. The reason people were calling it that is because there was a belief that, like, anything that wasn't heterosexual was going to be essentially outlawed from, you know, public discussion in Florida. Schools, let's say. So, two days ago, LGBTQ teachers in Orange County, Florida are being told to take down photos of their same-sex spouses in their classroom and not to talk about them to students following the Don't Say Gay law taking effect. All rainbow articles of clothing are being banned. Teachers are now also required to report to parents if a student says that they are not straight. So, I'm confused as to how that screams freedom. And I'll just leave it at that. I do think, and let me just say this really quick. I voted for Joe and Kamala. However, if there was another option, which there will be many options, I would say that, okay, don't kill me, but if Bernie tries to run again, let's just let it go. I think that we just need to let it go. It's not going to happen. The powers that be will not allow that man to be president. That's all I can say. So as much as we love him, as much as we agree with the things he says, unfortunately, it's a pipe dream. It just simply is not going to happen. He's gotten shafted the past two elections. I'm sorry. It just it can't be a thing. It's not a thing. We need to give up. I will say that if he were to run, I would probably most likely prefer Gavin Newsom over Biden. One, because of age. Two, because of, well, not two. This is the big thing. I think that there is a, and obviously, the main reason that we're in the situation that we're in right now as a country is because of what the Republican Party has enabled certain folks in power to be more willing to do. It is the party of, you know, I have God and the Second Amendment behind me. I'm not scared of anything. Nothing can hurt me. I'm untouchable as long as I side with the president from 2 years ago. You know, the president of 2016. And I don't know why, But and this was mentioned quite a bit after the Roe decision came out, and everyone started getting text messages from, you know, Biden and all these other places to, oh, the Republic or the Democrats need, you know, your donation so we can make sure that we can fill these seats and keep these seats and, you know, support these people's campaigns. And, you know, all the people saying, oh, you need to vote. And then there was the picture of Kamala Harris on Instagram where she was saying, you know, oh, I was so disappointed with this decision and all that stuff. And then Joe was on Twitter tweeting about, oh, we need to do this or we got to do that, or it's about time that these people paid their taxes. I think the reason that they won the election is the same reason Trump won the election. They told people what they wanted to hear. And while I think it's weird, because it's like, I feel that they believe it, but it's just bizarre that they don't seem like they're willing to get gritty and fight for things that they want to have happen. Which, you know, Republicans don't care. They'll say whatever they need to say because at the end of the day, people are going to believe them if they're wearing the right colored tie. And it's not, like, I don't want to say that we got tricked because we didn't. But there's this idea that, like, they need to be civil in how they conduct themselves. Have they noticed how the people on the other side of the aisle behave? I don't think it's necessary. I think that the same energy should be sent to the other side. Because it looks like on the internet, from what I'm reading, that the vast opinion is that they want to fight, but they don't act like they want to too hard or at all. The intent is there, but the actual act of doing so is not there. I think that for a president or a vice president to go on the internet or to stand at a podium and say that a decision upsets you is, it's not, I don't want to say inappropriate, but it's just nonsense. Like, you have the ability to change things. You're the president. You can really, you know, to a certain extent, kind of do whatever you want. I mean, the other guy did it for the past 4 years, and no one really checked him on it until he decided to, you know, let his people run wild in the nation's capital. So I'm not saying be corrupt. I'm just saying be more assertive in your profession, which is what I think someone like Gavin Newsom would do. The statements that he's made about, specifically when Roe was overturned, way more relevant and powerful than anything that, you know, the president or the vice president has done. And I think the reason for that is because there's sort of some, you know, unconscious conditioning that they've been under, where it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people simply just want to be understood. And so to have people in office that you feel you can relate to and that understand you and sympathize with your problems, that's great and all, but they have to do more than just say, oh, I'm with you. Show me that you're with us. Do something. Do your job. Be effective. Or else we're not going to vote for you next time around. I feel that a lot of people that voted for this pair are not going to vote for them again. There was talk of our loans being forgiven. My balance is still the same. Not that it's the biggest problem going on in the world right now, in the country right now. We have a lot of other issues. I'm not really worried about my loans. It's, you know, it's kind of a back burner issue to me at this point. But that's the reason they got elected, is because they told a lot of people what they wanted to hear. They made it look like they were good, decent, moral people. Okay. But the problem is, now that stuff is getting bad, they're still being decent. And you could be moral and ethical while still, while being assertive. You know, I think that a lot of people confuse that. A lot of people that just want to be heard confuse that. That anything past anything that's assertive is just deemed aggressive, viewed as aggressive. And I feel like we've elected people that don't want to give off that vibe. You know, they want to be civil and they want to, you know, sit down and have the meetings and everything. They don't want to get in anyone's face and tell them what needs to be done. And so I think, with that said, that stuff's got to change quickly. You know, or else there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be learning how to drive with a steering wheel on the right side of their car. It's weird because I don't feel like I'm exaggerating when I say that. And I also don't feel like I'm exaggerating when I say that, you know, if Trump somehow gets elected again, which would be, I don't want to say a miracle because it would be a shame, but it would be a miracle of the worst kind if the man were to get elected again. I just think a lot of people are going to lose it. And I don't just mean like liberal people and progressive people. Like on the emotional end of it, I think that there's going to be kind of a chaotic loss of a chaotic sense of self in the people that voted for him. We remember 2016 when he did win. All that kind of emboldened mentality that a lot of people were walking around with, where, you know, these supporters that he had, these ideas that he ran off of, the things he said, the behaviors he displayed, there was an idea in a lot of people's heads that this was all okay. And so they started outwardly acting on those things. And then, you know, 4 years later, it results in a bunch of people storming the Capitol because of a lie that they were told for the past, you know, God knows how long. And these things that were said to them that made them so attached to this guy. I think that in more ways than one, especially if the Supreme Court overturns this whole thing about the electors, that if he does win again, well, first of all, the electors thing would be bad in itself, but if he does win again, based on the electors, either way, if he wins again, it's all gone, it's all fucked, it's all done. But I think if it's because of this whole elector situation, again, either way, but I just think the elector thing would make it even worse. Either way, like, that's it. Like, the democracy thing is done. His largest supporters condone violence against minorities, even death, threatening people who aren't Christian, don't celebrate their religion. Anti-Semitics, racists, violent people, uneducated people, unintelligent people. That that's like the base, you know. To see that a lot of people that are in office support these things openly and get criticism for them, but there's absolutely no repercussion to the things they say or their behavior. I just simply can't feel like I'm exaggerating when I say this, that the whole thing would be done. So I mean, you know, every election is important because it sets the country up for the next 4-8 years. But this is one, like, this is the one with everything that's happened recently where, I do think that all of the freedom stuff would just be just no more. And when I say freedom, I mean the actual freedom, not the idea of freedom. I mean freedom in the sense that you can be yourself and, you know, be a good person as long as, or, you know, live your life as you want to, as long as you're within the parameters of being a good, decent person. I think that's what the freedom thing means. It's gotten grossly misinterpreted over the past few years. And I think it's soon to, it came to a peak on January 6th in an isolated sense. But, you know, I think if there is an election that we have that goes the wrong way, where we do get him as a president again, I ponder if it's the last election. Call me dramatic. It's fine. If he does win again, I probably won't be living here, which means that I would be much more willing to talk about how I feel about the whole thing. But, you know, in order to be a good boy, I just have to, I can only say that I think that things can get very bad. If the party of anti-LGBTQ, book burning, super Christian conservative, control over women, if that's the party that wins the Oval Office, you know, let alone, the majority in the Senate or Congress. So yeah, I'm glad I could end on a positive note. That's all I got. So something to think about. Isn't it just crazy, though? You know? That all these things are happening at once. And I know that, you know, they make all their decisions and they come out with all their decisions. But, yeah, I definitely think that last thing could be the absolute worst thing for the country. Definitely would have some sort of ripple effect across the entire world. But, you know, yeah. Anyways, I will talk to you soon. I guess the only positive thing that I do have is that Andrew Giuliani didn't win the primary for the Republican candidate for governor of New York. So at least stuff might be okay here for a little bit longer. That's probably about it. That's all I got. Anyways, have a good weekend. I guess there's this thing where people are going to be like wearing black on Independence Day, just as kind of like, you know, make a statement or whatever. super ineffective. And then, you know, maybe a lot of people won't even know what they're doing, like me, because I wear black every day. But, yeah. Enjoy those socio-political conversations with your families when you hang out with them on Independence Day there. Or as I like to say, especially this year, we have, what is it there? Oh, yes, Subservience Day. Let's call it that. Let's see how far it gets us. Have a good weekend.